7. As the flames of the enormous explosion cleared and boiled away to little plumes of smoke, Desidora and Ululenia shared a look with a miner who stood in front of them on the main dock. "As the wolf scents prey on the summer breeze, we should investigate what happened," Ululenia said, smiling at the miner. Desidora, as a former love priestess, knew sexy smiles when she saw them. This had the dangerously excited twist that made targets think about breaking the rules and threats and stress, and how all of those things made the heart rate speed up, and put the body into fight-or-flight mode, although fight was not precisely the right word here. Said the miner, a young Urujar man. "In the event of a magical explosion, we're supposed to, arrogant apple, babbling brook..." He trailed off uncertainly. "I hear mines are exciting," Desidora said, breathing with a bit more chest than necessary and rolling her shoulders, since apparently that was how they were playing this one. "And we'd be so careful. You'd be in charge of both of us." "We'd do whatever you say," Ululenia added. "Well, I guess as long as we go creeping in like cats, we'd be all right," the miner said, stammering a little. And Ululenia took his hand and led him from the dock into the mine. The door to the processing center closed ahead of them as he entered the mine area, and the miner led them over to the right, where a massive lift led down to the lower tunnels. It was scorched from the explosion, which was not how Desidora preferred anything that was to support her weight to be. Nevertheless, the miner stepped on without a second thought. His first thought was likely related to how Ululenia was running her fingers up and down his arm and making little, noises. The lift clanked into motion, descending with a shuddering, rattling motion that made Desidora's teeth chatter. "So, Jervil, what do you do for fun so far from all the cities?" Ululenia asked, still doing the arm thing.
"I, said the miner, presumably Jervil, who was almost certainly a virgin, given how much attention Ululenia was paying him,
and who really had no chance whatsoever at this point.
"We play Sufkasuf and sing most nights. The airships flies back to the city every few weeks for a break."
"All of you?" Desidora played with her hair a little and leaned against Ululenia. "Even the guys at the processing center?"
"Oh, no, not them," Jervil said quickly. "They mostly keep to themselves. They have official Republic business. We're not supposed to bother them at all. In fact, if this is something that might concern them, we can decadent dubs."
He blinked and went silent.
"I can't wait to see this mine," Desidora said into the silence. "If it's dark, can we all hold hands?"
Ululenia giggled and squeezed the fingers holding hands with Jervil, who flushed and looked away. Desidora took the chance to shoot Ululenia a look, eyebrows raised.
"What happened to dawdling duck?" she thought, as loudly as she could. "As the hare sheds her plain winter coat with the warmth of the coming spring, so all of us must grow up sometime," Ululenia said in Desidora's head.
The lift descended in silence, passing by level after level, with the walls growing a bit brighter as they went. Each level had one or two long mining tunnels leading off into the red-lit distance. Desidora felt the magic prickling at her skin now. She had expected the explosion to have burned most of it from the air, but it emanated from the walls so strongly that the priestess could almost see waves shimmering before her. The walls themselves shone with an even brighter glow than outside, a clean ruby light so luminous that glow lamps weren't needed. It was the same ruby red glow Desidora had seen in the makeshift golems she had fought months before. It made sense, of course. If these were the crystals in their natural form, then the process by which the crystals were wiped of any attunement must return them to their natural color as well. They still reminded her of things with blades and hooks for hands trying to kill her. And of Gil's power, whom she had trusted, controlling them the entire time. Heat pricked Desidora's face and arms, and she looked down to see that her skin had gone pale. The air around her stung like a sunburn, the ambient magic reacting to the power of her Death Priestess aura, with the beginnings of another explosion. With Ululenia's wide and ostensibly innocent eyes upon her, Desidora let out a long, slow breath
and released the anger. The magic swirled away, and she was a love priestess again, feeling Jervil's confused but very excited aura reacting to Ululenia. The lift finally stopped in a massive circular chamber, from which multiple tunnels led off in every direction. Minecart tracks were laid down through most of them, although in some cases the tracks were clearly in a state of disrepair, inhabiting tunnels that had been boarded over. Desidora saw that they were not alone. In the strange ruby-red light of the mine, it was hard to guess its size, and everything was either red or black, but she guessed that the figures would only come up to her waist. They moved around at what could best be called a scamper, some walking, some leaping on all fours with furry tails flitting behind them. She thought they had fur, and their faces looked like something between fox and human. Desidora could feel the inherent life energy of every natural living creature. Humans and elves and dwarves had auras, with the elves feeling brighter and sharper, and the dwarves feeling more solid and stable. Fairy creatures had no auras at all. The question of whether something had an aura had never been a confusing one. Until now. Looking at the creatures, she saw energy, the beginning of a familiar pattern, and then it went somewhere else. Her eyes sliding over the blank space back and forth uncomfortably, like a tongue worrying at an aching tooth. The energy didn't end. She would have been able to sense that. Instead, it was as though it went to some place Desidora could not follow, like a road twisting out of view behind the trees.
"Oh, those are so cute," she chirped, feeling the magic around her and working out how to draw upon that power without immolating herself if need be. "What are they?"
"Kobolds," said Jervil, looking nervous. "You're supposed to be nice to them. Miners who aren't nice have accidents." He lifted the hand that didn't have Ululenia all over it, counting.
"Usually only see one at a time, if that. Maybe the explosion brought them out, or..."
"No, this isn't right. We shouldn't be down here. Come on, I'll take you erotic eggplant." He shook his head again.
"Jervil," Ululenia said, coiling her arm around his waist. "I bet there's one mine where nobody has gone for a long time, and there are rules about it, even more than the other ones that are shut down. And, Jervil, if you could point me at that mine, I would be so grateful."
Her leg was hooked around the back of his knee, almost like they were dancing.
I said Jervil. "Fondling fern," and pointed at one of the tunnels.
Ululenia leaned in with a kiss that twined around Jervil like a warm summer breeze, and the virgin sank to the floor of the lift and did not move when Ululenia stood up.
"So at least fondling fern stayed the same," Desidora said, stepping off the lift and into the mine.
"I saw no reason to change it." Ululenia followed her, and Desidora heard a faint hiss followed by, "Damn it!"
"Horn reacted to the ambient magic."
"As the wasp stings my forehead," Ululenia muttered. The kobolds scampered away as the two women walked toward the mining tunnel Jervil had pointed at. They watched from the edge of the room. Looking carefully, there were no shadows, which made it hard to tell for certain. Desidora thought that some of the kobolds watched from in the walls.
"Have you heard of them?" she asked.
The magic still pulsed around her, but she'd gotten the feel for it now. Outside, she had pulled magic from the wall itself. Here, she might be able to do it from the air, if need be.
"The kobolds?"
"Never," Ululenia said. "Fairy creatures have little use for minds, but the feel of them is..."
"Wrong?"
"Yes." Whatever they were, the kobolds stayed carefully distant. Their eyes tracked the women as they crossed the floor and came to the tunnel Jervil had pointed at. It was boarded off like the rest, but Desidora saw that the boards had been built into a simple door, and the minecart tracks were clean and functional. She pulled the door open, and the kobolds, all of them, darted back at the squeak of hinges. Magic rushed out around her, and she let the death aura roll over her, used it to turn that magic away, to be the oil around which the water flowed without dissolving it.
"Ululenia, are you all right with this?"
"It... yes, for now." Ululenia's voice was strained.
Desidora looked back and saw that Ululenia was leaning over, one hand shielding her forehead.
Let us hurry.
The tunnel ahead was darker, which at first made no sense to Desidora. As she started down the path, though, the magic boiled around her, and she realized the truth.
The crystals fling out energy, some of it light. As we get closer to the purest sections, the magic is so strong that it overwhelms even that light.
Something skittered in the walls, something with a voice between a giggle and the sound of a tin fork dropped onto a wooden table.
How do they live in this? Ululenia said behind her.
I am not certain they live at all. Desidora kept the magic safely at bay and kept moving. If not for her death magic, she would already have died. The walls faded to blood red as they walked, and then a deep burgundy, and then, as Desidora began to fear they would be walking in darkness, she saw light ahead, blessedly normal white light from a glow lamp in a chamber in the distance.
When this is over, Ululenia muttered through gritted teeth, I am going to ravish young Jervil.
Desidora looked back. Ululenia's face was flushed, and she squinted as she walked.
Do you need to go back? I am fine.
You didn't sound as though young Jervil would be choosing to enjoy your company of his own free will, Desidora said very quietly.
I am fine, Ululenia hissed. And he would be as well. He was more than willing. I was in his mind.
Yes, I know, said Desidora. Decadent dove, erotic eggplant. Ululenia let out a long breath.
I am trying.
Desidora turned back to the tunnel ahead. The kobolds scampered through the walls, making whatever strange noise they made. She put them out of her head and focused on listening up ahead. She thought she could hear something. Words, maybe. She picked up her pace. The magic swirled around her as the ocean waves now, first pushing her back, then drawing her forward, lifting her and pulling at her ankles. She half expected sand to have buried her feet with each step. The words had a cadence, a rhythm, like a chant. It was familiar, and it took a moment, echoing off the tunnel walls, to make itself known to her. When it finally clicked in her mind, Desidora broke into a run.
Concognito, Sephoris.
Desidora had carried the magical warhammer Gilspower for months.
Concognito, Sephoris.
He had been a gift from the gods when she became a death priestess, an ally in her quest to stop the glimmering folk from returning to the world, and one of the few friends who had trusted her, even when she radiated the power of death.
Concognito, Sephoris.
And it had all been a lie. Desidora had been tricked with all the others, blind to her ally, her friend leading them astray as he brought his people back to rule the world. She stepped out into the chamber at the end of the tunnel. It was circular, the walls glossy black crystal, and Derry, wearing only a loincloth, lay chained to a crystal altar, unconscious as far as Desidora could see. Standing over him was a golem controlled by Gilspower, who held the great warhammer up over Derry's helpless body.
Concognito, Sephoris Gil, Desidora called out,
and felt the cold black power of death coil around her. For a moment it burned. And then she took that boiling ocean and pulled it into her, through her, and flung a bolt of jet-black fire that slammed the golem carrying Gilspower into the far wall.
Nobody will die while I watch.
Indomitable, courteous, icy fist avoided cursing, as he avoided strong intoxicants, defacing religious property, and eating the flesh of animals. He had not sworn oaths to this effect, as when he had sworn to commit no deliberate harm to a living creature, but the temple where he had trained had listed them as strong suggestions. As such, he did not yell anything rude at Tern or Hessler as he spun through the air, flexing his body to roll with the shockwave of the immense explosion that Hessler's magic had just triggered. Upside down, still tumbling, he looked back to see a boulder flying at him from the rock slide that had started. This was a problem, as was the fact that he was perhaps 50 feet above the ground and would likely be landing on rocks. He twisted, flexed, let the boulder come to him, caught it with both feet and kicked off it and up, letting the boulder sail below him as he gained altitude.
This carried him into the path of another boulder, but twisting in midair, he let it whoosh past his back, close enough to graze his golden robes, and then into the path of a smaller rock sailing at his head. He found the point of stress on the smaller rock, reached out with one cupped palm, and snapped his hand taut just before it would have smashed into his head. The stone shattered into dust, and the effort checked Icy's momentum and stopped him from tumbling, which was excellent, because the spinning had made it hard for him to concentrate, and the next several seconds would benefit from as much concentration as Icy could muster. No more rocks were sailing at him, and for one brief moment Icy hung suspended in the air, at the apex of his leap from the boulder, looking down at what was now a 60-foot drop. With a breath of effort, Icy snapped his arms and legs out wide. As his golden robes flared out with them, his hands and feet caught the sleeves and hem and pulled them taut. As he began to fall, his robes billowed out like a great circular sail that caught the wind. Icy rode the wind, his robes slowing his descent just enough to turn it from an absolute certainty of broken bones into something that a very well-trained man could, with skill and a little luck, roll away from, with nothing more than a few bruises. Icy was a very well-trained man. He hit the edge of the rock slide feet first, tucked into a roll that spread the impact across arm and shoulder and back as he came up to his feet, immediately leaped over a jagged boulder that would have dashed his brains out, parried a smaller rock as he twisted to the side, turned that into another roll, and came back to his feet atop a pile of rocks that he danced across with nimble little steps before leaping clear onto solid ground.
"Three tugs," he said to himself,
in a tone that was not significantly far from cursing. The rock slide had entered that precarious point where much of the great mass had settled into a stable position, but enough was still shifting and falling and sliding that none of it could really be called finished yet. As countless tons of rock had poured from the shattered canyon wall, the landscape of the area had shifted, and Icy looked around, trying to gauge where Turn and Hessler had been standing.
"Thief!"
came a voice that sounded like a man speaking through a long tube, and a cloaked figure of about dwarven height hopped down from the rocks and landed before Icy. Icy had barely caught any of the conversation between his teammates and the presumable trackers, as they had been down on the ground 50 feet below, while he had been very quickly worming his way out of a collapsed tunnel at the time, but Turn had sounded alarmed.
"Your allies are likely buried under this rubble," Icy said, "but may still be alive. The same applies to mine. If you care for them, as I do mine, I suggest we search for them now and resolve this confrontation at a later time."
"Thief, dead,"
said the dwarf-sized figure. And now, having had a moment to recover, Icy listened past the strangeness of the voice and caught what else was wrong. He saw the figure's cloak, miraculously free of dust despite the rock slide, even while Icy's own golden robes were stained with glowing red grime. Icy shut his eyes. He felt the movement behind him, pivoted, and allowed the attack by the real tracker to hiss past him. It was not humanoid, whatever it was, and Icy heard the hiss and click of countless little legs scraping on the dirt. Then the rocks cracked as the tracker struck them, its blow carrying it through the illusion it had projected. Icy opened his eyes and saw for one moment something akin to a scorpion with a body the size of a large dog and a strange lumpy tail with a great crystal stinger and a glowing sack beneath it. Then the wall of rocks, disrupted by the impact of the scorpion creature, shifted with a gentle rumbling sigh and buried the creature under a pile of rubble. Icy made sure that the creature was not immediately going to burst out and attack again, and then looked at the nearby trees. He spotted a group that looked familiar, albeit now surrounded by glowing rubble, and hopped up onto the rocks again.
"Turn!" he called. "Hessler!"
He looked and listened. For a long moment there was nothing save the continued rumble and clatter as the remains of the rock slide sorted itself out around him. Then he heard what sounded like a bell chime. Following the sound, he saw in the air a few feet above the rubble a glittering point of light like a tiny fallen star.
"I am coming!"
Icy danced across the rubble, the stone sliding beneath his feet, even as his light steps barely touched them.
In seconds, he was there, standing atop an unfortunately large pile of rocks that might possibly have had an irregular hump underneath it.
One moment.
He looked at the larger stone, found the point of stress and weakness, and shattered it with the palm of his hand. He shoved it aside, found another, and shattered that one as well. He swept the rubble away with the outside of his foot and broke another rock, and then another. When his body told him that even his disciplined strikes risked breaking his hand, he switched to kicks. Finally, he struck past a stone and found something that was not more stone beneath. It was pink by the light of the glowing walls, likely white or pale blue by natural light, and looked like the foam that topped Tern's immensely impractical carver drinks. The consistency was like that of an old sea sponge, however, an icy push to the porous surface, looking for points of weakness.
"Is it clear?"
came Hester's voice by Icy's ear, and he looked over to see another sparkling point of light.
"It is!"
Icy called down.
"Stand back!" said Hester's illusionary voice, and Icy stepped away.
A moment later, a thin cylinder of white-hot light burned through the foam, creating a clean, circular cut. The circular section popped out like a cork from a wine bottle, and Icy reached down and pushed it aside, wincing as the still-hot foam burned his fingers. Beneath the dome of spongy foam, Tern and Hessler huddled. Icy reached in.
"Three tugs," he said gravely.
"See," Tern said as Icy pulled her up. "Aren't you glad we had that worked out beforehand?"
"Glad may be an oversimplification of my feelings on this matter."
Icy helped her to sit on the rocks, away from the increasingly foul-smelling burned foam, and then reached in for Hessler.
"Excellent work, with what I presume is some sort of alchemical material."
"Yeah, I never thought it was useful for much, but you know, I have all these pockets, so it's silly not to bring it."
Icy pulled Hessler up.
"What about the trackers?" the wizard asked. "Buried, at least for now. But given your survival, we cannot discount the possibility of theirs."
Hessler stretched his back, groaning.
"Does that mean running?"
Icy smiled.
"I am afraid so."